Welcome to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's podcast for innovative entrepreneurs and executives. And brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP Chartered Accountants. Here is your host, Robert Gold.
Welcome back to the continuing adventure, the voice of entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs, the business insights launched by CPA Canada, their fantastic new book based on these podcasts. Let's join the roundtable now, still in progress, going strong with some amazing final thoughts from our hosts and our panelists.
Andrew, you want to throw some questions now on surprises.
I would like to, and I'd just like to build on that point as well. A lot of entrepreneurs are very passionate about their business and they love the idea of getting new business, new clients, and they talk about measures, but the challenge is then devoting time and resource to actually collect measures. That's in itself a different challenge. But what I'm hearing from their panel and from what we've heard when we speak to folks is that business is messy. With businesses being messy, chaotic, there are occasional surprises, those great aha moments, both good and bad. And so I'd like to turn to our panel and ask for those surprises, both pleasant and unpleasant surprises that you experienced at different stages. So I see Claudia nodding her head.
She's nodding.
So Claudia, maybe you can share a really pleasant surprise and a really unpleasant surprise that you experienced as you were building your company through increasing manufacturing capacity and expertise.
Well, I think the example that I have is both a good surprise and a bad surprise. Initially, it was oh my goodness, surprise, because we received inventory from our outsourcer that we just assumed was going to be fine. And we were about to meet a big box retailer demand for the spring of a certain season. And I opened the boxes and the quality of our product was horrific. And we had 10,000 units, which is 20,000 gloves, that I basically had to go through and make sure that what could be sellable and what couldn't be sellable. And that was our big aha moment, that we actually had to take control of the manufacturing process and understand exactly what we had to do to move our company forward. If we had stayed in that exact cycle where we were outsourcing our product, I would definitely have failed as a business today. We were very close that season to failing as a business, and it was probably $1,000 away from closing up shop. So it was a lot of hard work up until that point, and it was an epiphany to say, no, we're not going to close up shop. We're going to keep going. I'm going to take these 20,000 gloves, go through them. It took about a month to go through them, be able to sell what I can, and had to discard what we couldn't, but we've already paid for it. So that really killed our cash flow that year. And we just squeaked by making our inventory, but that was a good thing. It allowed us to take control and the decision-making to go to a manufacturing partner that could meet our needs, and we took control of that whole entire process. So, but it was a very difficult season.
Derek, your thoughts. Again, I saw you nodding as well when I talked about surprises. Something really positive, something really not so positive as far as building new products and product innovation processes.
Sure, same sort of idea. It's both a pro and a con. And for us, it was really the aspect of community as it existed on Red Flag Deals. So the community is great because they love to give you feedback, and feedback is what you want as you build and iterate a product. However, the community can also be very, how we shall say it, opinionated as to what they want to see. So it's always two sides of the coin. You have to realize that these are people with very distinct opinions that you both want, and at the same time, you can't always take their word for it. So on the pro side, we were always surprised by their willingness to go and share our story, to share about the site, to tell other people that we existed, and to really get the word out. That was our source of building, you know, mind share and market share. On the con side, when we try to make changes, for instance, we have a very popular, you know, community that's very vocal. And if we were trying to redesign the site with all intentions of making it much, much better, all these new features, everything that is great and good. However, change is hard. Change is always tough for communities to accept. And we were not prepared for the sort of backlash that we got and the very public scrubbing we received when we went out there with a brand new redesigned site. What did that teach us in the end? It taught us that we have to involve them in the process. So instead of just saying new design, flip the switch, here it is. It's great because of these reasons. We actually had to go and survey them a bit more. We had to prep them and brief them. This is something that's coming. Is this something that you'd be interested in using? If you have feedback, we'll adjust to that. You have to publicly show and be responsive to that group. And if you are, then they become much more supportive. It becomes a product that they've helped build instead of something that you sort of build and push upon them. And that's really key in building that community.
Excellent.
So, well, Phil.
Did we leave somebody
out? We forgot Phil. Phil, I know you've got surprises, both good and bad, when you think about partnerships as a means to build a business.
Absolutely. I think if you take a look at the positive side, most of the alliances I've been engaged in typically tend to be sales alliances, marketing alliances, and the like. As Robert had pointed out, it really is all about metrics and metric management, ensuring you're making your number, quite frankly. And I fully agree that you can't manage what you can't measure. The pleasant surprise is always when, quite frankly, you make your number and you've done extremely well in terms of both parties. On the challenging side, if you will, I think it really tends to be more on staff resistance to alliances, which also creates a lack of trust. And part of that is because staff sometimes believe that when an outsider is coming in, they might start taking jobs, or typically some staff have a not built in my backyard sort of philosophy. However, as a result, what one should do is typically when you start an alliance, you should create an executive champion. So an executive within your organization who, quite frankly, becomes the cheerleader associated with that particular alliance, and who can talk to staff as to what is the strategy behind the alliance, what is the impact associated with that alliance, and what are the net benefits associated with that alliance. But again, typically it can be more on the trust factor that can be challenging.
Excellent.
So it's always nice to look backwards and say, well, if I had to do it all over again, what would I do differently? And I don't see Claudia nodding this time, because maybe she wouldn't do anything differently. But Claudia, if you could, what would you do differently that would help you change your approach to manufacturing and optimizing your growth?
Well, I think hindsight is 20/20. So at the time going through the whole process, I don't think we could have done anything differently, because we were so new and green to the whole process that it was fly by the seat of your pants. In retrospect, with what I know now, and if I would start another company in the same type of retail manufacturing environment, I would take control immediately of the manufacturing process and not rely on someone else to provide that key component of my business, and that is very crucial to your business. I would also understand my numbers a little bit better, like the metrics that Andrew was talking about. You have to understand, as I've gone through this process, I know my numbers, I know how to make the profits that will be absolutely lean to my business and how to maximize my margins. And going into it and planning it, I would tighten the financials before I started the business and starting the business out, and try and find probably strategic alliances that would meet the areas that we're not experts in, because you can't be a jack of all trades forever. As you grow your business, you have to start trying to find partners that will align with what your needs are, and that's the stage that we're at right now.
So let's explore just for a second. So Claudia's point there is, if she could do it all over again, she would know more about the manufacturing. Yet how many of us know about manufacturing? It's not something that I would know how to set up a manufacturing arm. So Claudia, to go back to you for a second, if you could do it over again, who would you reach out to learn from to become an expert in manufacturing?
Someone like me, to be honest. Someone that's been there, done it, bought the t-shirt, and how they created a manufacturing process at a profitable level.
So Derek, to you, there's a number of companies under your belt. Pick any one of them. What would you do differently to better hone your product offering?
Sure. So Red Flag Deals is probably the one that most people are familiar with. So we'll look at it from that lens. And if I could go back and totally agree, hindsight 2020, it's tough to think like this. But I would say that we certainly had an opportunity at internationalization. We focused on the Canadian market. We sort of proved that we could make it work. We were very profitable in Canada. And at that time, there was a lot of other markets that were underdeveloped. We never sort of took that seriously. Obviously, it's comfortable to focus on your home and your local market, but with the web and digital the way it is today, it's very easy to be an international business. There was a company that is now publicly traded called Retail Me Not that was started in Australia, but most of their audience is based in the US. So it can be done. Somebody else did it. Unfortunately, it wasn't me. If I had to go back, I would definitely look at opportunities to make it bigger, more international, dream bigger. And I think that if you are familiar with sort of the startup community, this is one of the pieces of criticism and feedback for Canadian entrepreneurs, is sometimes they don't necessarily dream big enough. And so now with Workin, we are definitely dreaming a lot bigger, and we want to take this thing international. We think we can be this pre-LinkedIn solution for all the guys that are in this retail hospitality space looking for part-time shift-based hourly work, and we can do it across the globe.
But one of the other analogies I want to bring up there with Derek, and one of Derek's cohorts at Connect Cafe is Chris Carter. And Chris took the attitude with their email marketing service company that they wouldn't go to the U.S., they would stay in Canada and be the best in Canada, where all their competition, email marketing, was going to the U.S., and they all got killed. And yet Thin Data became the leader of email marketing in Canada because they focused on Canada, didn't go out and try and cut the whole world into pieces that they could swallow. And they ended up selling to Transcontinental. It was a terrific opportunity for Chris and his team. And their focus was, let's be the best in Canada. So although we want to go global, let's not lose sight of being in Canada, being very strong in Canada before we reach further. Phil, over to you then. What could be done different in all the partnerships and all the alliances that you've seen through the association? What could be done differently in some of them that you've seen?
Again, it does get back to education. First of all, just by way of numbers, it's estimated that with the Fortune 1000 companies in the United States today, approximately 40% of their revenue are derived through some sort of alliance. 20 years ago, that number was about 3 to 6%. So when I first started alliance management 20 years ago, there wasn't necessarily the same level of education relative to best practices as there are today. So when I managed the IBM alliance at Bell Canada, or I managed alliances at Rogers Wireless, to Claudia's point, sometimes you sort of fly by the seat of your pants. However, there has now been that significant growth in terms of whether it's text, manuals, or again through ASAP, in terms of that level of education to ensure that one can understand what is the appropriate governance process. Quite frankly, what is a governance process? 20 years ago, that was nascent to us. We just did not know about it.
Thank you. Anyone who has listened to the Business Cast podcast knows that we like to actually have very practical advice, and that's what we're focused on today. But I'm going to drill down a bit further as well. And we've got some intrepid entrepreneurs around the room today, I'm sure. And they're going to be thinking, what can I do this week? What can I take away from the panel? So I'd like to turn to each of you and ask you to give us two, maybe three things that the folks can take away and implement this week to help their company grow. And again, through your lens. So Derek, from a product innovation and product process, what can the folks do this week?
So it's about feedback and speed of iteration. So the first thing you can do, one easy way for anybody to be able to stand out, is to respond quickly. So we probably get tons of emails in our email box, and one of the things that make you different, or a plumber different, or anybody who's in sales different from the next guy, is the ability to respond. So if you can respond within 5 minutes of when you receive this message in your mailbox, you will make an impact, and that will improve your business. So that's the first thing. The second thing is more of a technological sort of trick, is email tracking. So there's a whole host of tools out there, including free ones now, where you can send an email and you know when the other side opens it, how long they opened it for, where they opened it, what device they opened it, and it's all doing that in the background. And with that intelligence, you can follow up much more elegantly and with more context and get a sense of the level of interest. So I think if you even did those two things, you could hopefully improve your business, you know, dramatically.
Excellent. Thank you. Claudia, manufacturing. What can the folks around the room do this week to increase their manufacturing expertise and capacity?
Well, I think you actually spoke about it earlier, is understanding the planning, the whole process from front to back, understanding the logistics and how the logistics fit in, and figuring out how that affects the cost and the price of your ultimate good going to market. So the planning is absolutely key. You need to have a proper product that will meet the market needs and demands, and then price it accordingly, and making sure that all the pieces in the logistics pipeline meet exactly what your profitability needs are. Very fine line to do all that.
Okay, thank you. Phil, partnerships, they're complex. We know that. What can the folks do this week to make sure their partnerships help their companies grow?
I think the first thing they should do is, quite frankly, establish a gap analysis to determine, are they missing a particular component within their business that they require some assistance with? I would then start focusing on a build, buy, and ally review. What is the best for your particular business? How are you set financially? And then finally, and I know I've raised it a number of times, but it really is education. Search the net, go to ASAP, go to Amazon. There's a lot of material on alliance management. As I had mentioned, 70% of alliances do fail in 3 years. So you want to switch that around to 70% actually being successful in the 3 years. So it's really starting to understand what the best practices are.
Excellent. Thank you.
Andrew, I want to throw it to you again. You're a referral strategy guy as well. You counsel a lot of companies on referral strategy. What can we share with the people in the room today to make their referral strategies more successful as they look to grow their businesses?
I think the important thing to remember is why referral strategies tend to be the fastest path to revenue. The reason why that is the case is because you don't have to invest the money, the time, the effort, the cycles in getting people to know who you are, because referrals are people who know who you are. So I would say, first, take a look at people who know who you are and believe in you. Identify those folks. Second, I would also say take a look at your business over the last 18 months. Where did business come in? And in this age of CRM and mobile and social, there's really no reason why every business owner, leader, entrepreneur can't know where that business is coming from. So I would say do that. And then finally, I would say start to profile those people who are or could be staunch advocates for you. This is particularly relevant if you've got a business that has long sales cycles or it's business to business. So start to build a profile. Understand what it is they like. Why do they come to you? Understand what their goals, their expectations, their desires are. So that sets a good foundation for a referral strategy. Now I'm going to throw something to you. You, I've heard speak a few times about two P's and the F.
Two P's and an F. Of all the interviews we've done for the Business Insights book, which remember you can find at cpacanada.ca/bizinsights, the entrepreneurs tell us over and over again about the two P's and an F. Passion, perseverance, and what do you think the F is? Anybody want to shout out what is the F? Passion, perseverance, and fun. I've had that before. In fact, it's passion, perseverance, and focus. And fun always gets yelled out when I ask that question. So passion.
Give her a book.
Passion. give her a second book. Passion, perseverance, and focus. Those are the keys to success. If there's anything you're going to take away from this event today, it's that. It's passion, perseverance, and focus. That is the key to success in any entrepreneurial endeavor, in any large scale endeavor. And of course, have some fun as well. Now, over to our audience, the live audience for this podcast. We have some live mics there. We have counting down the last few minutes. Any questions you might have for any of us or the panelists? Let's take those questions.
I see a hand raised right over here.
I see hundreds of hands raised. There's thousands in the audience.
That's it.
For those of you in podcast land, there's tens of thousands of people. We fill the Sky Dome in Toronto.
So my name is Meredith Mednick. I'm a commercial banker with Royal Bank. And I have two questions, one for Derek and one for Claudia. First of all, Derek, I am a fan of Red Flag Deals, which I know isn't yours anymore. But
I still visit the site too.
A lot of the time I see people posting and reposting deals, and what happens is that then it dilutes it for other people, and then you lose the retailers or the businesses that you do work with because you've kind of popularized something so much to the fact that they don't want to work with you or they get rid of a deal or something. So how do you deal with something getting too big? And then my other question is for Claudia, which is, in such a niche like yours, how are you dealing with the new trends emerging? So now shellac is really popular. So how do you kind of innovate your product to maintain your niche, which is women gardeners, but innovate with new products?
You know, I would phrase that as something that's a good problem to have. If you get too big so that you help them sell out their inventory, they have to pull a deal, that basically puts you on the radar. So for us, we generated a lot of leads, and these are merchant leads, advertisers, because we're able to help them sell a lot of something that they had no expectation and they did not pay for. Somebody finds a deal, they share it with the community, a whole bunch of people go and buy a particular product, they see a spike in their analytics because they pay attention to that too, and they come back to us and say, how do I get more? They might pull that particular product because they sell out, or they can't offer that at that price at scale, but they want to figure out how to re-engage the community. And the guys and the merchants that got the most out of working with us were exactly the groups that realized the potential there and then figured out what they could do to sort of optimize the opportunity and how we could work with them, whether that be unique offers or coupons or deals, so that they can get more of what they wanted and be able able to overall see that we can help them increase, you know, sales, availability, product knowledge, that type of thing. Just to finish off even the previous answer, to give you guys something you can actually use with names for email tracking. If you're in Outlook world, you can look at ContactMonkey. If you're using Gmail, you can look at Tout, or you can look at Streak CRM so that you can actually install something. I know I left those names out.
To answer your question, when we created our glove, we were concentrating on women that had a need to protect their manicures. So we created in the actual fingertip what we call a pillow top protector in the fingertip. And this actually meets the needs of any woman, and men actually have used our gloves as well, that want to protect their fingertips from any debris coming down. So it can be any type of treatment on the nail. It could be a manicure, just a typical manicure. It could be shellac. It could be biogels. It can be anything that you want. Or even just for women that just don't like debris under their fingertips. Nails. For instance, my business partner at the time, 6 years ago, she constantly had the high-end bio gels on her nails. I did not. It just wasn't in my lifestyle at the time. Now I do. So I like them. I still didn't like the debris under my fingernails. We were friends for about 15 years, and literally the creation of our concept happened over a Labor Day weekend over beers on my deck. That was her talking about her destroying her manicure in the garden the day before, and me going, yeah, I don't like crap under my nails either. So that was the germination of our product. So we can take that pillow top protector, and we now have an industrial design patent on our glove in Canada, the United States, and the EU, and we can put that pillow top protector into any type of new concept. And men, we don't want to leave you out. We have a new prototype happening right now, and we're going to be calling it Dig It Man. So there are some men that actually like to take care of their hands and nails as well. So it's even a niche of a niche.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions?
This is for Claudia. Claudia, could you just walk us through the process if you were to receive a large order from a big box retailer in the state? So you got an order for $300,000. Next steps, please.
The sales and logistics cycle is probably 9 months to 10 months ahead of time. So we would get an order now in October. We would order product from China at the end of October. It would be manufactured and on the boat by Chinese New Year, which is probably end of January, early February. Overseas, coming to us into our warehouse. I no longer have a storage unit, by the way, and I don't pick and pack myself anymore. I now have a logistics company that does that for me. Yay. It comes to our warehouse. They receive it from the containers. They repackage it, label it. It gets back onto a truck out into the store level and gets into store probably by May 6th. So to meet Mother's Day and May 2-4 weekend, which is the big gardening weekend. The sales process happens probably May or June the previous year. So it's a whole year's sales cycle. And the cash flow management of that entire sales cycle is astronomically huge for a small startup to understand that. And that's probably the biggest challenge, is the logistics management of that entire process.
Thank you. What about the financing, though? If you were to receive a huge order, all of a sudden now you have to scramble to get a line of credit or factoring or...
Yes, all of the above. Okay. We have done self-financing. When we first started our company, my business partner and I self-financed the entire operations ourselves. When we got our first big box order, we couldn't finance it ourselves. So we went to RBC, and they were a wonderful partner with us. And we moved from a different bank, which I will not mention, to RBC, and they didn't even know me, but they were wonderful as a partner. We're now probably moving to the commercial banking side because we're large enough to move to commercial banking. Or we're also talking to factoring companies as well to manage the PO process. So there's a whole variety of methods to obtain financing. You can sell equity as well. You can go to angel investors. There's a whole variety of methods that we've looked at, but RBC has been a wonderful partner, and factoring companies is something that we're looking at to manage our expansion into the United States, which is happening in Home Depot in 2015, by the way.
My name is Jimmy Chu, an MBA student. Quick question for Claudia, but if the other two speakers can also provide an insight, that'd be great. With regards to patents, you're selling a very unique product. What are your criteria to apply for a patent, or do you have a patent to protect your product?
We have an industrial design patent on our glove, which is different than a patent. Industrial design patent is for usage, and it's a very, very important thing, in my opinion, to get a patent on a unique product or a unique part of your product, and you need to do it within a year's time of your first application, which I didn't know about. And thank goodness I went to a good patent lawyer that managed the whole process for me. A lot of entrepreneurs go to the patenting process themselves because you can do that online with the government. We didn't. I wanted to do it right from the start with the right partner, and we actually went through two patent lawyers before we actually ended up with the patent lawyer that we use in Ottawa, and he's been absolutely wonderful. We had a company that copied us and tried to sell exactly my product. They took my picture off our website website and sold it in the UK. And one of my UK retailers told me that they got this email from this manufacturing person in Pakistan. And is this me? And I'm like, no. So I immediately called my patent lawyer immediately with, you know, my gut churning and said, what can we do? And he immediately sent a cease and desist letter to the Pakistani company to say that their entire shipments into the UK, regardless if it's just gloves or anything would be tagged and flagged at customs, that would be held until they can prove that that product is theirs. In order to do that would have cost me an absolute fortune. So thank goodness I didn't have to. They stopped right away. So the patent process, if you're going to have a unique product, I think is very important, and you have to do it in the correct way. And I highly suggest that you go to the proper types of lawyers that can help you with that. We have three types of lawyers, and I think it's very important to have the proper type of lawyer to help you with your niche. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Thank you.
So thank you to our panel very much. A little promo for the book, which, as I mentioned to you, you can get at cpacanada.ca/bizinsights. It's an amazing read. We call it a subway reader. If you're in Toronto moving slowly on the transit, you can knock off a chapter between stops. It's 24-page chapters. It's amazing pearls of wisdom loaded in there. Check that out, cpacanada.ca/bizinsights. And until next time, I'm Robert Gold, Managing Partner of Benegold LLP, Chartered Accountants and CPAs in Toronto.
And I'm Andrew Brown, President of Right on the Money.
And you know where to get the book, Business Insights, at cpacanada.ca/bizinsights. You can find other great episodes of the Profit Business Cast at profitguide.com. See you next time in the morning, everyone. Thank you, Derek, Claudia, and Phil for joining us at CPA Canada and Great West Life for hosting this amazing event. Good night, denizens of the CN Tower. For those of you in our live audience, we're all happy to meet you at the back. Sign the book. Thanks for coming out bright and early to our entrepreneur extravaganza.
You've been listening to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's business podcast, and brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants. From acceleration to succession, strategy to tax planning, there's a lot more through the door at bennettgold.ca.